Back in 1989, I came into possession of a baby starling, a nestling whose eyes were still closed. It's technically illegal for rehabbers to release invasive exotic birds into the wild, so our family decided to keep him permanently. I had always had a place in my heart for starlings since before I even knew what they were. When I lived in the dorm in college, I used to save French fries from the cafeteria to put on my windowsill, and these plump, short-tailed birds with yellow bills and dark plumage spangled with white spots in winter and silvery speckles in spring would fly in to take them. A few years later, when I got my first field guide, starlings were the first bird I looked up based on my memories of those dorm birds. It didn't take me long to learn that these cool little birds I was so fond of were actually a big and dangerous problem for native birds here in America. A man named Eugene Schieffelin released 60 starlings in Central Park on March 16, 1890, and their population quickly exploded. Starlings are one of the primary reasons that red-tailed woodpeckers have declined, and they take out a lot of bluebirds as well. Schieffelin's goal in bringing starlings here to America was to, quote, naturalize every species mentioned in a play by William Shakespeare. In Shakespeare's entire body of work, he mentioned starlings exactly once, never dreaming that one short speech would change the American avifauna forever. In Henry IV, Part 1, in Act 1, Scene 3, the character Hotspur, who wants the king to ransom his brother-in-law Mortimer from a Welsh warrior, says, "He said he would not ransom Mortimer, forbade my tongue to speak of Mortimer, but I will find him when he lies asleep, and in his ear I'll holler, Mortimer. Nay, I'll have a starling shall be taught to speak nothing but Mortimer, and give it him to keep his anger still in motion." So, of course, we named our little starling Mortimer and hoped to teach Morty to talk. My original plan was for me and the kids to repeat the word Mortimer over and over and try to limit other sounds Mortimer heard, but this was a household of two talkative adults and children who were 3, 5, and 7, so it was pretty much impossible to limit what he heard to his name. Our Mortimer made a lot of vocalizations, but in those days before cell phones and before I had good equipment at home, we have no recordings or videos. I wrote, at the time he was 5 years old, that when I read to the children, Morty always broke out into an interesting song, making long, sweet burblings that lasted for up to 5 minutes. Over the years, he learned to imitate a great many sounds from our home environment, including the phone ringing, the doorbell, and our smoke alarm. But Morty always strung these sounds together in long sentences with jumbles of his own notes, and no matter how much we talked to him, Mortimer never learned to imitate a single word in the 9 or so years that we had him. I think about Mortimer every March 16th, the anniversary of starlings being introduced to America, and every April 23rd, the anniversary of Shakespeare's death and the day many people celebrate his birthday. Even though he was a member of our family for almost a decade, I don't think about Morty in my day-to-day life except when I hear a burbling starling making the same sounds he once did. But a couple of weeks ago, thoughts of our dear Mortimer flooded into my mind again, thanks to some emails I received from Timothy Flannery, who had his own starling that he named Mortimer for the same reasons I did. I'll talk about Timothy's Mortimer next time. I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.